Radio.
Youth Ministry After Evangelii Gaudium. A Core Night Talk by Father Chris Ryan, MGL. Hosted by Catholic Youth Services in Sydney.
It's really nice to be here. It's great to have the chance to talk about this topic. The reason why I chose it is I actually think youth ministry looks different after this letter from Pope Francis. So it's called a post-synodal exhortation, which means that 12 months earlier, there was the synod on the new evangelization. And you remember, Benedict was still the Pope. Then it's become a practice, become a custom, that after a synod, where a whole bunch of bishops get together to talk about a particular topic, for the Pope then to write a reflection based on what they discussed and what they reflected upon. So, of course, in the meantime, Pope Francis was elected, and then he wrote the letter as a response to the synod or coming out of the synod. So we can't say everything. It's a thick document. It's a reasonable size document. In fact, in it, Pope Francis says, look, I might have gone on too long, and people don't like reading long things these days, but I thought it was important. So he knows what he's doing when he's writing something like that. But he's obviously thinking that he wants to say something important. Tonight we can't talk about everything that's in here, obviously. I've chosen six things that I think are going to be helpful for us. The first thing I want to say is that I think it's so much of about Pope Francis, and we're going to get into what his words are tonight, but that flows out of the man, flows out of who he is. And if one way in which youth ministry can learn from our current Pope is to recognise that the medium is the message. Have you ever heard that expression? So the person who brings the message actually in themselves actually kind of embodies or conveys what they're on about. So I think for Francis, I think it's his humility. I think it's his joy. I think it's his confidence. I think Pope Francis has a deep, he strikes me as someone who has a deep confidence in the power of God, in the power of the gospel. So he doesn't feel the great need to try and persuade people to fall in love with God. He has a deep confidence that if you present the person of Jesus to people, Jesus is plenty attractive enough for people to discover him and to be drawn to him. The other thing that really strikes me about Francis, I could have picked other things, is he deeply loves people. Doesn't that come through? You know, there's image after image of him embracing people, of clearly delighting in people. The little book of reflections that I wrote last year has a picture of a young Australian girl meeting Pope Francis at World Youth Day. And you can see his obvious delight in her. She's having the time of her life, but you can also see his obvious delight in her. I remember going up to her afterwards and asking, what did she say? And she said, I tried to say something in English. She kind of looked at me like, I don't understand that, and said something to me in Spanish, and we were done. So, but clearly, he's just completely, you know, really engrossed, captured by her. And I think that's something, isn't it? Like, if, you know, show me a youth minister who can love God for all they're worth, but doesn't actually love the young people that they're with, and you've got a recipe for at best disaster, or at best ineffectiveness, and at worst disaster. So Pope Francis, the man, but we want to actually really get inside of his words. So 6 points, half an hour, here we go. Number one, youth ministry is all about evangelization. Now, the reason why that might sound really obvious, especially if you come to a night called CORE and the E stands for evangelization, but it hasn't always been the case. People haven't always thought about youth ministry as fundamentally being about evangelization. Sometimes it's been thought of as a retention strategy. When I was growing up, I think I'm 39, I think my age group was the last age group that were really forced to go to Mass in large numbers. And so the youth group that existed in my parish when I was growing up kind of had a retention strategy. It was about keeping the kids that were there, okay? A retention strategy. Sometimes youth ministries can have a recruitment strategy as well. You know, how do we kind of, you know, add some bums on seats? How do we find more kids to be involved? And that could sound a little bit like evangelization, but it could sound also a lot like what we're doing here is some kind of marketing kind of ploy, some kind of tactic to just draw people in that doesn't necessarily get to the heart of the gospel. Evangelization is something deeper than just how do we get more numbers. So Pope Francis makes it really clear that all ministry after this letter is about evangelization. At this point, we come to a big problem. You remember I said just a few moments ago that the new evangelization was the topic of the synod. Okay, so you have bishops from all over the world gathering together for a month in 2012 to discuss the theme of the new evangelization. You've heard that phrase. Some of you will know what it means. It's a phrase from John Paul II, okay, our newly canonized saint. John Paul said that there are three kind of places for ministry. Okay, the first one, he said, was what he called the mission ad gentes. Ad gentes is Latin for to the people. Okay, so when John Paul thought of those, of what that looked like, I think he thought of places like Asia and Africa, because there are parts of those continents where there are people groups in 1990, when he wrote about the new evangelization, they're places where the gospel has not been proclaimed, where the people there don't know about Jesus at all. They've never heard the name of Jesus. That was his first category. John Paul II's second category was what he called the normal pastoral activity of the church. So he was thinking here of where the church was well established and it was doing its thing. The church is doing its regular ministry, and it's particularly about caring for those people that are part of the church and actively involved. And those sorts of places will often send missionaries to other countries. I think, he doesn't say it clearly in his letter on evangelization, Redemptoris Missio, I think he's particularly thinking of Poland, because that was where he's from. Okay. Then he has a third category, where he says that there are places, usually of countries of ancient Christian origin, where large numbers of people who have been baptized no longer practice faith. And he says particularly too that it doesn't have to be an ancient country. It could be more recently established countries or churches. So what he's thinking of there largely is Europe and places like Australia. Because as you'd be aware, we've got large numbers of people who've been baptized as Catholics but don't practice their faith. So this is John Paul II in 1990. He says that last group need a re-evangelization or a new evangelization. So that's where the term comes from, okay? Now, you might have been sitting there saying, well, does Australia really belong in that third category? Because I don't know about you, but I imagine everybody here are people who are active, committed, involved, your youth ministry coordinators and leaders. But you quite possibly live next door to somebody, you might even live with somebody who's baptized but doesn't practice their faith. And across the road might be somebody who's really never heard of the name of Jesus, except perhaps as a swear word. They don't really have any meaningful kind of understanding of the person of Christ at all. So what has happened? What happened over those 20 something years was that the geographical boundaries that John Paul was thinking about have broken down. South America and Africa are booming places for Christianity and for the Catholic faith. So you can't talk about Africa as a mission country anymore, because there's actually more practicing Catholics in Africa than there are in a place like Australia. Much more. Okay? India has many, many people who've never really heard of the gospel, but in Kerala, just one part of India, there are more Catholics than there are Australians. Not Australian Catholics, Australians. Okay? So the geographical boundaries are broken down. So when Pope Francis wants to talk about the new evangelization, he says this. He says that the new evangelization takes place in three settings. To people who've never heard the gospel, to people who are active and involved in the life of their faith community, and to people who've been baptized but who don't practice their faith. Now remember, John Paul II had just said that last group was new evangelization. Francis says all three groups are now new evangelization. When he does that at the beginning of Evangelii Gaudium, that's the first time he uses the term new evangelization, He uses it only two more times in the rest of the document. Every other time he wants to talk about evangelization, he just calls it evangelization. So can you hear how the new evangelization has changed? Okay, so it's no longer about people who are baptized but don't practice their faith. It includes them, but it also includes people who are involved in the life of the church, active, you and me. And it also includes people who have never heard the gospel. I think that's really, really helpful. And it's a paradigm shift. Okay? Why? Why does it move things? Because what we used to do is you used to have to say, here are people who need to be evangelized, and here are the committed Christians or the committed Catholics or the practicing Catholics. And the assumption was that they didn't need evangelizing. Well, you heard Matt, and Matt, everything you shared tonight will tie in really beautifully with what I want to present. Because what we heard from Matt was Matt saying, I was raised as a Catholic, but I had to make that faith my own. I had to be evangelized. Okay? And that's true of me, and that's true of all of us. And so we don't actually divide it up into evangelized and unevangelized in that way anymore. Those who need evangelization, those who need pastoral care, we see that much more now as a process. Okay? Different people will be in different stages of that process, but it's much more a process. Francis says at the beginning of Evangelii Gaudium, if we took Pope John Paul II's words seriously, that mission must be the heart of the church's identity and practice, we'd realise that missionary outreach is the paradigm for everything the church does. So he's saying it's all about evangelisation. Here's another line from Francis. He says, I dream of a missionary option, that is a missionary impulse capable of transforming everything, so that the church's customs, way of doing things, time and schedules, language and structures can suitably be channeled for the evangelization of today's world rather than for her self-preservation. So you can't say youth ministry is about youth ministry anymore. Youth ministry is about youth evangelization. It's about helping people to encounter Christ, become a missionary disciple themselves. Here's the first quote I wanted to... your heads have lost it. So, here's what he says. We need to move from a pastoral ministry of mere conservation to a decidedly missionary pastoral ministry. Now, that's a bit of a tongue twister, but what he's saying is that we can't think about saying our youth ministry is just about the kids who come to the parish on the weekend. That's conservation. That's looking after the ones who show up. And, of course, that group is a smaller and smaller group of people. He's putting us onto the front foot to say, actually, we need to be thinking really seriously about how do we reach those young people, first of all, who are baptised but aren't engaged or involved in their faith, but also the bunch of young Australians who aren't connected to the church at all, who've never been baptised, who don't know who Jesus is or what he's about. Do you hear the shift? Okay, can you hear the shift in focus that he's saying there? That all of those things are now part of evangelization. That brings us to the second point that I want us to take away from Evangelii Gaudium, and that is you can't give what you haven't got. Okay? And so Pope Francis spends half of the second chapter of Evangelii Gaudium talking about what I've called dangers for not just youth ministers, for all ministers. Okay? And then he spends the last chapter talking about a missionary spirituality. We can't say everything that needs to be said. We're going to just summarise that into a couple of key points. The first thing he says is that we need to be, because he recognises that he recognises that the key to fruitful and effective ministry, and so therefore youth ministry, is if we have a passion and a commitment and a fire burning inside of us. And that's a passion, I think, for God and a passion for young people. And he knows that there are things that can erode that. And I, as I sat with some of you this evening over dinner, many of you have been involved in youth ministry long enough to know that it's not all plain sailing. It's not an easy ministry. There are very difficult times, and there are things that can be at work inside of us, things that we imbibe from the culture around us, things that just kind of get at us as we're trying to live our own lives of faith that actually can eat away at our commitment. And so Pope Francis takes some time to talk about that, and I think it's worth us hearing them. First thing he says is he wants us to say no to selfishness and spiritual sloth. And he does then a little list of things that we could that kind of fall into that category. He talks about often when people get really tired or burned out from ministry, and that's something that can happen to people who've been involved in ministry for a while. He suggests that sometimes that's because they're doing the wrong things rather than doing too much. He also thinks that sometimes people can have unrealistic expectations about what can be achieved, and that eats away at their commitment. He says other people can want everything to fall from heaven rather than letting things occur over time. So that's the youth minister who says, yep, I'll take on the role of youth minister, and they expect 100 people to show up the first week. Okay? Unreal expectation about what's going to happen. Sometimes, he says, people can be attached to a particular project or a dream of success. And he says that when those things don't come to pass, we get disillusioned, bitter, and before you know it, you're a statistic. You know, you're one of those ex-youth ministers, okay? He also says it's possible to lose real contact with people. You can get more concerned about the plans, about the strategies, and really fail to recognise that our ministry is fundamentally about relationship. It's fundamentally about people. Here's one that I think is really important for youth ministers. He says that today's obsession with immediate results makes it hard for pastoral workers to tolerate anything that smacks of disagreement, possible failure, criticism, or the cross. If you can click it on your phone and you can have, you know, the world come to you in your hand, to kind of think that something might take a bit more time is something that doesn't necessarily come naturally to us anymore. And so after he's gone through this list of things, he says, look, the biggest threat then gradually starts to take shape. The grey pragmatism of the daily life of the church, in which everything seems to be going normally, while in reality faith is wearing down and degenerating into small-mindedness. So that's the person, that's the youth minister who's still doing all the stuff, still running this activity, still doing the youth group, still doing all the things that they need to be seen to be doing, but all of their heart's gone out of it. They're just doing what they have to do. And of course, that's actually soul-destroying. And so Francis wants to actually encourage us that we don't have to actually work and minister like that. If you've been around for a little bit, you'll know what he's talking about when he talks about that grey pragmatism. Yeah, that's actually, it's a very real experience in the life of the church. He also lists a couple of other things that I want to briefly mention. He says to be careful of spiritual consumerism. Okay, so that's kind of like we think of everything, you know, our world is so influenced by the market, by capitalism, that we think of everything as a product. And we can do that with God. We can do that with our faith. So a spiritual consumer might say, well, I'm going to go to this activity, but not that one. Or I want to do this thing in this church, but in this parish, but I'm quite happy to go somewhere else for something else. And they pick and choose. Okay? Francis is saying that that doesn't have a lot to do with the real life of discipleship. Here's something that also I found both challenging but really important. He talks about a spiritual worldliness. So this is where, this is a quote, a supposed soundness of doctrine or discipline leads instead to a narcissistic and authoritarian elitism, where instead of evangelizing, one analyzes and classifies others. So that's a quote with a lot of big words. What's he saying? He's saying, this is where instead it sounds like you're all passionate about orthodoxy and right doctrine and sniffing out heresy, so that immediately what you start doing is you're saying, well, that's a liberal, that's a conservative, he's an orthodox priest, he's a heretical priest. she's an Orthodox youth minister. She's a terrible, hopeless, awful, unbelieving youth minister. And he says that spiritual worldliness has nothing to do with the gospel. He also says that we've got to say no to warring among ourselves. And again, if you've been around for a little bit, you know that that's a challenge too, huh? That whether it's in the parish community and the tensions that can happen, or whether it's amongst people in the broader church that at a diocesan kind of level, there can be very real fights amongst different people and different groups. Francis says one of the most radiant signs of the gospel is a community that knows how to make up after they've had a fight, who knows how to reconcile. And so he says, if we're going to be serious about being followers of Jesus, we're going to say no to the internal fights. And when conflict happens, he's realistic about that, we'll make up, we'll reconcile. I mean, that's a really important challenge for us. And I want to stress, this is the Pope. Okay, this is not Father Chris Ryan's personal take. I'm just literally repeating what the Pope's saying. Okay, so there's the challenge. In the last chapter, as I mentioned, he wants to say something about a group that he calls Spirit-Filled Evangelizers. That's the name of the chapter. And what he wants to cultivate is a missionary spirituality. He says that's what's really necessary. And here's what he says is the motivation. There's his first selfie. But he says, this is the motivation for spreading the gospel. If we've received the love which restores meaning to our lives, how can we fail to share that love with others? I want to suggest that's the only real motivation for sharing the gospel. The only real motivation for ministry is that if we've encountered the love that gives meaning to all of our life, how can you not want to share that? My great example of that is... this is where I'm going to alienate all the blokes in the room, but the musical Singing in the Rain. So the bit where the guy's fallen in love, if I've offended any of the blokes who've seen it, I apologise. Great movie, recommend it to you. He's fallen in love with the girl and they've been up all night and he's going home and he's got the umbrella and it's the scene with the actual song Singing in the Rain. And he's dancing down the street, doesn't care that he's getting wet, okay, as he sings the song. Because he's in love. Doesn't mind who sees him looking stupid. Doesn't mind who notices. Doesn't care that he's getting wet because he's fallen in love. Well, there's my model of a youth minister for you. Not afraid to be silly. Not afraid to do something outrageous. Because you're in love and you want to share that. Francis knows that. And he says, and this is his language, a personal encounter with the saving love of Jesus is the heart of a missionary spirituality. He says, it's impossible to persevere. This is a quote. It's impossible to persevere in a fervent evangelization unless we are convinced from personal experience that it is not the same thing to have known Jesus as not to have known him. Not the same thing to walk with him as to walk blindly. Not the same thing to hear his word as not to know it. And not the same thing to contemplate him, to worship him, to find our peace in him, as not to. He's making that a really critical criteria for our spirituality as ministers, that we know the saving love of Jesus Christ. His words, not mine. Finally, last couple of points really quickly under this section. He says, and this is coming out of his own personal experience, authentic missionary spirituality draws close to other people. He's saying you can't be fair dinkum about sharing the gospel unless you love people. Sounds obvious, but how true and important it is. And of course, sometimes, I mean, I know you don't do youth ministry unless you love the young people that you're working with. The challenge for us, I think, sometimes is to say, well, I love these guys, but there's usually somebody in the group that's pretty challenging. To be extended in love. Or if we've got a bit functional in our ministry, to be reawakened to a really genuine love in Christ for the young people that we serve. He also talks about a deep confidence in the risen Jesus and in his spirit. And this is what I mentioned at the very beginning, that Francis embodies this. I don't think Francis feels the need to persuade anybody about Jesus. I think he figures that the Holy Spirit will do a perfectly good job of that. His job is to live a life of faithful, loving service, and that will be a sufficient witness. It's the Holy Spirit's job to convince people of the truth of the gospel. It's not ours. And I think Francis has a deep confidence in that. So there's no desperation when he's trying to proclaim the gospel. When he preaches, if you've ever seen any of his magnificent homilies, he's not trying to convince anybody or persuade anybody. He's going to let God do that. He's just going to speak confidently of the love that he has encountered and experienced for himself. And lastly, he talks about the importance of intercessory prayer. He says the church urgently needs the deep breath of prayer. What a beautiful image, huh? But isn't that important? I don't know about you, but I can think of many, many times where I've launched out in ministry, only in mid-flight to think, I really haven't prayed enough about this. I really haven't really grounded this in prayer. I really haven't drawn the team of young people that I'm working with together, and we really haven't sought the Lord properly, asking him what he wants us to do. The church urgently needs the deep breath of prayer, the power and importance of intercession. And that's because Francis believes that it's God's job. We're simply participating in what God's doing. All right, I have a feeling I'm running behind time already. Number three, the most important strategy is the community. One of the things about the new evangelization is that people have 1,000 strategies. If you Google new evangelization, you'll have like 45,000 different ways of, you know, surefire, hotshot ways of spreading the gospel. I think Francis cuts through that and he says the key strategy is actually the faith community. What's he saying? And this is where he talks about evangelizing communities. He's calling for our parishes, and most of you are parish youth ministers. He's calling for our parishes to be more than what they have been. That they need to be communities of missionary disciples. That's people who are disciples, they fall in love with Jesus and want to live the way of life that flows from that encounter with him. And then therefore they want to share that with others. They're missionaries. They want to share the love that they've received. And he's saying there needs to be a shift, that our parishes can't be simply about maintaining what's already going on. They have to take a leap forward and they have to go out to others to actually welcome and engage. Here are the characteristics of evangelizing communities, according to the Pope. He says they've got to be joy-filled. And they're joy-filled because they know the risen Jesus. They need to be centered on Jesus. They need to express practical love and care. You know the young person's name who's come into the parish mass for the first time. Somebody's gone over to talk to them. You know that somebody who's sick is being visited. Somebody's ringing up to ask how they are. They're bringing them a meal. Practical love and care. They're supportive. Young people need, and we'll talk more about this in a moment, young people need to be walked with, accompanied on the journey. Here's an important one. An evangelizing community, and this is a quote, has an endless desire to show mercy. Not sure if you've noticed, but when people think of Christians in our broader society, mercy is not the first word that comes to their mind. Radical loving is not the first words that come to their mind. But they should. That's the gospel. That's the gospel. And so we should have an endless desire to show mercy. This is where Pope Francis said to the priests, the confessional cannot be a torture chamber. Very, very important. For us as a faith community, though, too, it would also be really important that when a young person walks in the door, that somebody actually says hello. That they feel like they feel like they're welcomed and invited. That's being supportive. He also says that they're going to care for the grain. This is a reference to the scriptures. They're going to care for the grain and not be impatient about the weeds. Sometimes what we do is when we expect young people to come into our midst, we expect that they're actually already living the complete life of faith. So when they're doing something that's inconsistent with the gospel, we're horrified, or the parishioners around us are horrified, and the young person's made to feel like they're condemned or judged for something that they haven't bought into yet. And so Francis has this beautiful image here of, let's be patient about the grain growing and not get too worried about the weeds. You know, the scriptural passage is referring to where the weeds and the wheat grow up. And the person says, should we cut down the weeds? And the farmer says, don't do that. because you'll get the wheat, you'll get the weeds as well as the wheat. Wait till harvest time, and then we'll separate them. Francis is cautioning us to be patient with people. And I think this applies particularly to young people, doesn't it? That our accompany of them means being patient. They're going to take two steps forward and one step back. Sometimes they're going to take four steps backwards and one step forward. It's okay. It's okay. We want to walk with them and accompany them with love and that endless desire to show mercy. One of the interesting things about this is Pope Francis is teaching this, so it's part of the papal teaching. But there was a study in America done of what they called exemplary youth ministry. They picked 128 different congregations, some Catholic, some Protestant. And they picked these communities because they were doing good stuff in youth ministry. Some of them were big parishes or big congregations, some were small. Some had paid youth ministers, some had volunteers, but they were all kicking goals when it came to youth ministry. And the thing they found that was absolutely key was what they called the culture of the community. That this was a place where love was present, where faith in Jesus was explicit, where people gathered together to practically care for one another. And basically, they found that what Francis describes is what people actually love and like and are drawn to. Now, at this point, I'm sure you're thinking, my parish doesn't quite look like that. And probably the truth of the matter is that you probably represent parishes where they look more like that than other parishes do. So you guys are kind of like the gold star parishes, most likely. Okay. And you know that other parishes don't always look like that. Pope Francis puts in a claim in Evangelii Gaudium not to give up on the parish. He says the parish might evolve and change in how it looks, but he says we're always going to have the parish community. And so he puts in a very strong case for making sure that our parishes are renewed, not discarded. So I'm not being idealistic when I suggest that we need evangelizing communities. And you don't have to. One of the things about it, of course, is that your youth community will embody something of this. But youth ministry can't be kind of isolated from the broader faith community of which it's a part. One of the things that we need to work towards is making sure that not just simply our youth group is an evangelizing community, but we're helping to make the parish an evangelizing community too. I want to suggest there that the concept of a quorum. You don't need everybody in the parish to be on the same page about this. You just need enough. How many is a quorum? Is it 50%? I don't think it has to be even that many. There needs to be enough people who get what we're talking about here, and they will carry that vision forward. Is that okay? All right, I feel like I'm going way too fast. So, the church which goes forth is a community of missionary disciples who take the first step. So the implication here is we're not waiting for people to come to us, but we're going out to them. Point four. Francis suggests that we need to start with the basics, but we shouldn't stop there. And so he talks about a number of key things. He wants us to go to the heart of the gospel, and that's actually an expression in Evangelii Gaudium. It's a heading, so it fits very well with the idea of core. And he says that the first proclamation that we should be talking about, so in a sense when we apply this to youth ministry, the first youth ministry talk, in a sense, should be, and here's a quote, Jesus Christ loves you, he gave his life to save you, and now he is living at your side every day to enlighten, strengthen, and free you. The heart of the gospel is of the saving love of God that's revealed in Jesus. It's that we've been loved by God enough that Jesus will come for us. And it's possible to know him now. Not some historical figure who lived 2,000 years ago, but somebody who we can have a living relationship with now. And Francis says all of our activity, that has to be the very center of it. We've got to talk about this. And I think it's one of the great problems in our church is that we've presumed that. We've presumed everybody knows that. We presume that everybody has said, yep, I believe that. But that's actually not true. And so in youth ministry, if we're serious about it being about evangelization, what we're going to do is we're going to make sure we talk about the heart of the gospel, the core message of our faith, the love of God that's revealed in Jesus. Now, we can tease that out. I'll leave some of that for questions. One of the things that he also wants to stress here is let's make sure that things that are secondary don't get confused with things that should come first. So one of the things, one of the examples is he's saying, let's not get obsessed by various teachings of our church, particularly our church's moral teaching, we have to talk about all of that, all the hard stuff, all those difficult things, all those things that put us at odds with our broader culture. And Pope Francis is not saying run away from those things, but he's saying before you get to that, talk about the love of Jesus. Talk about the risen Lord. Talk about it being possible to encounter God. Then we'll talk about the difficult moral questions that flow from that, the life of discipleship and the choices that we have to make if we want to be faithful to the encounter with God that we've had. But don't start there. I think that's a message we really, really need to hear. Okay? Because people are being turned off left, right, and center, thinking that Christianity is fundamentally a moralism. Don't do this, don't do that. They don't realize it's fundamentally an encounter. Yes, there's a way of life that flows from that, but it comes after we've talked about the encounter and after we've helped young people to experience, to have that encounter with God for themselves. This is beautiful. The message has to concentrate on essentials, on what is most beautiful, most grand, most appealing, and at the same time, most necessary. Isn't that a magnificent quote? E.G. 35. Isn't that a magnificent quote? Most beautiful, most grand, and most necessary. So the idea is we're talking about the core of our faith. Here's another description of it. He says, in its basic core, again I'm quoting, what shines forth is the beauty of the saving love of God made manifest in Jesus who died and rose from the dead. Francis wants us to hone in on that and not be afraid to keep talking about that. And he says we should never stop talking about that. But he also says we shouldn't leave it there. And so then he also discusses what's often called catechesis. The word catechesis has its origins in the word echo. What is catechesis an echo of? It's an echo of the proclamation of God's love. So all of the things that we teach, and so catechesis traditionally has been about the creed, the doctrinal things that we believe. It's been about the moral life of the disciple, okay? Usually that's been based around the Ten Commandments and the Sermon on the Mount. It's about teaching people to pray, and it's about the sacraments. So if you look at the Catechism of the Church, they're the four sections, okay? That catechesis, though, should always be tied back to God loves you, and in Jesus you have a constant companion and friend, the risen Lord, with you. It should always be tied back to that. And therefore, it also means that catechesis isn't simply an intellectual exercise. It involves intellectual formation. Okay? We have a rich intellectual tradition in the church and we should talk about it. We should help people to understand its beauty. But it's also about praying. It's also about the life of faith and choices and decisions that we must make as disciples. It's putting those together. So he talks about catechesis. Now he also talks about accompaniment. I've referred a little bit to this already. He talks about how important it is that we have, that we as ministers walk with people. And so for us, that we walk with our young people. He says that's critical. Not be afraid for them to go forwards and backwards, to be patient with them, to be encouraging, to be a listening ear. These are the things that are at the very heart of our ministry as youth ministers. Point five. Jesus and justice go together. Basically, what Francis says is, if you love Jesus, you're going to love other people. It's the very heart of Jesus' message. Love one another as I have loved you. Love God, love your neighbor as you love yourself. And Francis says, so it's about loving Jesus, which means it's about loving others and especially the poor. For many years, there's been a false dichotomy in youth ministry. You've had people who said it's about justice, okay, about social justice activities and programs. You've had a bunch of other people saying it's about evangelization, it's about an encounter with Jesus, it's about the love of God. And often those two groups have not seen eye to eye. There's been tension and conflict. Francis, after Evangelii Gaudium Youth Ministry, it's really clear. It's about God and others. It's about an encounter with Jesus and it's about justice. They go together. It's one gospel. That's really, really important. Francis makes that really clear. An authentic faith, which is never comfortable or completely personal, always involves a desire to change the world, to transmit values, to leave this earth somehow better than we found it. This is one of my favourite parts of the letter. We love, it follows on straight from the previous section. We love this magnificent planet on which God has put us. And we love the human family which dwells here, with all its tragedies and struggles, its hopes and aspirations, its strengths and weaknesses. The earth is our common home, and all of us are brothers and sisters. Beautiful. We love the world that God's put us on. And that means we want to make the world the best place it can possibly be. We want to work for the building up of the kingdom here. So we can't say that this is something that other people should do. If we want young people to be fully evangelized, they need to be involved in practical love and service of others, especially the poor. And here's where Francis says, it's not enough just simply to practically care for somebody. We also need to recognize that our Catholic social teaching says we need to recognize what are the causes of their poverty. Why are they poor? And let's work to eradicate those root causes, those structural problems that lead to widespread poverty and injustice. So Francis will stress that. He actually really makes love of the poor a litmus test of our faithfulness to the gospel. I don't know about you, that challenges me very deeply. And I think that means it's something that we need to translate into our ministry with young people. The last point is that Francis calls for creativity and innovation. He says that the church needs to go out to the peripheries. Many of you will have seen the YouTube clip of Sister Christina in Italy, right? So this is cited as an example of that. So she's the young nun who was on The Voice, right? The Voice Italy. Going out to places where you wouldn't expect the church to be. Francis, this is a quote that many of you have probably heard. I prefer a church which is bruised and dirty and hurting because it's been out in the streets, rather than a church which is unhealthy from being confined and from clinging to its own security. I don't want a church that is concerned with being at the centre and then ends up being caught up in a web of obsession and procedures. Powerful quote, huh? He wants us to not be afraid to be creative and to do new and different way things in order to show the beauty of Christ. And I think this young nun did that beautifully, as she just captured the heart of Italy and through the wonders of YouTube, many parts of the world. Here's a fantastic quote. Jesus can break through the dull categories with which we would enclose him, and he constantly amazes us with his divine creativity. God is endlessly creative. Whenever we make the effort to return to the source and to recover the original freshness of the gospel, new avenues arise, new paths of creativity open up with different forms of expression, more eloquent signs and words with new meaning for today's world. I'm thinking that our youth ministry should engage music and the arts. It should engage digital communications. And it should engage in different ways that I have no idea about. You're far better qualified than I am. And the young people that you serve and work with are far better qualified than you to work out new ways of reaching out to their friends and contemporaries. We've got to let them have their head. We've got to give them the chance to really allow that to shine. And so every authentic form of evangelization is always new. Always new. In every age in the history of the church, every authentic form of evangelization is always new.
That was a talk by Father Chris Ryan, MGL. For more information on the Core Night Talks, you can find Catholic Youth Services on Facebook. And for more talks, interviews, and shows, visit cradio.org.au.